You know, when we fall in love, we are taking that chance, you know, that we know that we're taking the risk of being hurt one day. And, you know, we do say till death do us part when we get married. And but we just don't expect that to happen, you know, for many, many, many years. But for, a very unlucky few in Australia, it's not a lot of people, but it is, you know, for those people, it's their life. And they're going through this grieving process that can take, you know, months or years.
Warning, adult content.
The Hookup, love and f***ing on Triple J.
Dating after a breakup can be hard as it is, but imagine dating when you're single because your partner had passed away. Nat Tenchich here. Many young people have experienced losing a friend or family member, but it's rare to be widowed under 30. But it happened to Laura from Sydney, and she got in touch with The Hookup to talk about the difficulties she's had since her partner passed away.
My name's Laura, and I am from Sydney. I'm 23 years old, and it's not exactly the most common story.
Laura isn't your average 23-year-old. She's been through enough to last a couple of lifetimes.
I feel like my body might be 23, but my mind's like 83.
Yeah. Because she's already been married and lost her husband. But I'm getting ahead of myself.
So I met Dylan on Tinder. I was 20 years old and just looking to go on dates. He sort of put an end to that. We met up on a Sunday, and by the next Tuesday, I think it was, he met my parents, and we were together for 2.5 years. He was very, very honest person. He had a very hard-looking exterior. He was covered in tattoos, hands included, had a septum and a nose piercing and a moustache. He had what I've always called an absolute chronic resting bitch face. Like, he was pretty intimidating to approach, but he was actually just a big teddy bear.
Everything was going great, but Dylan was starting to experience some pain in his leg. And Laura thought it was probably just because of a car accident he was in 5 years ago. And she didn't think much of it until things got a lot worse.
And then early March 2017, the pain became pretty extreme and had moved to his right hip.
Long story short, it was cancer.
The way that he told me, I came back to the hospital from work that evening, and Dylan was complaining about the man across from him who was swearing and carrying on. And he goes, but, you know, if he's swearing and carrying on, I can too. I said, no, Dylan, he's dying. If you want to swear and carry on, you got to, you know, up your game a little bit. He goes, well, actually, Laura, on that, I've actually got a big mass on my leg. I've gone, oh, thanks, darling. That's wonderful. So that's how I found out. My first thoughts were, you pain in my ass. Like, of course, that's how you're going to tell me. And then I told him we were getting married, and he said no. He said, no, we're not. I said, yes, we are. He said, no, we're not getting married because I have cancer. That's ridiculous. I said, no, we were always planning on doing it anyway. I want to do it. I want to do it now. And, yeah, so from there, he refused for another few weeks. And then I started looking at wedding venues with my mother, and he goes, well, I guess we better buy some rings.
Dylan was started on chemotherapy right away, and his prognosis was looking pretty good.
So we went into planning the wedding with the hope of cure. It was a really, really good thing for both of us and for our families to have something to look forward to and spend time doing, you know, sitting in the hospital for 9 hours a day for chemo can get pretty boring. And yeah, we did a lot of it together from chemo rooms. So I was 22 at the time we were married, and he was 25. In the respects of being two young people who, you know, had an extremely deep connection, I never ever imagined feeling that at this age. So many people go, oh, but you were so young. But at the same time, we always kind of knew that was it, that each other were the real deal.
But real deal aside, there were practical challenges to looking after someone being treated for cancer. And Laura had a pretty tough time of it.
Sort of being thrown into something where I became his full-time carer as he was in a wheelchair. And he had quite high needs for pain relief, daily living tasks. It did strain at some times, and it definitely changed the dynamic in a lot of respects. But we were very adamant on working hard between us to try and keep it still a relationship and not just a sort of nurse-patient deal. We found out a month after the wedding that the cancer had spread before the end of treatment, and that we were no longer looking at cure, that we were looking at sort of worst case scenario about 6 months, best case scenario a year plus, and we were still going to continue various treatments in order to lengthen the time and quality as much as possible.
But after that moment, Dylan's health began to rapidly deteriorate.
After about a month, which most doctors and grief experts will tell you around the 40-day mark is generally when it tends to hit home, I realised that I was really quite lonely and had been relatively lonely for some time.
In April this year, Dylan lost his life to cancer. And Laura has been in the process of grieving and healing. And she says she's doing okay most days.
There's up and down. It throws you when you least expect it. The times where I need to sit down and be really upset about it, I will. But I'm not about to sit down and dwell on it and waste days that I can feel okay.
Laura says being a 23-year-old widow puts you in odd step with everyone around you. She's heard all kinds of advice about how and when to move on.
I've found that a lot of people who are older than myself kind of have a bit of a you're young, you should move on sort of attitude. But most people that knew Dylan and I together and separately understood and do understand that it was something that you can't find when you're looking for it. And whilst my family and friends have been quite encouraging of me going out and dating if that's what I feel like doing, or seeing people if that's what I feel like doing, they also really do understand that regardless of what I'm choosing to do, that it's going to be quite a deep scar that's going to be there for forever. Everyone seems to be quite keen on me having a second youth and going out and doing most of the things that people do as 23-year-olds before they meet someone and settle down. There's a lot of people out there who mean well when they make comments. Then there's a lot of people out there who want to say and do the right thing. But honestly, the right thing to do for anyone is to just support where they're at and to take their word for things. If somebody says, look, I'm cool with this, I'm having a really good day, this is something I want to do, don't second guess them. They're still adults. You know, we're all adults who make our own decisions. And just because somebody's been through something horrific, it doesn't mean that they need to be treated like they're porcelain. They're still people.
Laura's decided to grab life and say yes to as much as she can. And that does include dating, though she's going in there with baby steps.
I mean, like I said, I'm still trying to have my sort of second go at a big youth. But at the same time, it's difficult to be around people who don't have an appreciation for the bigger things in life. It's difficult to be around people who are only interested in how wasted they can get on the weekend. I promised myself and Dylan that I won't look a gift horse in the mouth, but at the same time, I'm not in any particular rush to be searching for a husband or boyfriend or whatever. If something happens, then that's a really wonderful thing. If not, then so be it.
No matter what happens, Laura says she'll keep Dylan close to her heart, and whoever enters her life next will have to accept that.
In lots of ways, it's been quite liberating for me to stop caring as much about how people react to it. Dylan was and is a huge part of my life, so if I'm to meet somebody who's not cool with me talking about him, then clearly it's not a relationship worth pursuing for me.
The Hookup on Triple J.
Laura from Sydney is sharing her story with The Hookup. Dr. Lillian Najjar, clinical psychologist who's with us on this topic. Thanks, Dr. Lillian.
Nice to be here.
Yes. So, look, it is a really tough thing to go through, especially at a very young age. You know, sometimes when we're young, we lose friends, we lose family, but to be married and to lose someone is so uncommon. How long can it take to process the grief when this happens?
Well, the grieving process varies for everybody, no matter, you know, who they lost. You know, when we fall in love, we are taking that chance, you know, that we know that we're taking the risk of being hurt one day. And, you know, we do say till death do us part when we get married. And but we just don't expect that to happen, you know, for many, many, many years. But for a very unlucky few in Australia, about 22,000 Australians have been widowed under the age of 44, according to 2011 census. So it's not a lot of people, but it is, you know. For those people, it's their life, and they're going through this grieving process that can take, you know, months or years. It really depends. It depends on a lot of things. It depends on, you know, their own personality and how they kind of manage things. Are they more introverted or are they more pragmatic? It can depend on, you know, their age, their previous experiences with grief, their social networks and connections that they have. And also, it can also depend on how, you know, their loved one died. And we've heard from Laura, and then it was, you know, cancer, and there was like probably a grieving process during that process. And then others lose their partners quite suddenly. So the process of grieving might be different.
Absolutely.
Depending on that.
Yeah, well, we did get a text in from Brooke, who says she wasn't married, but she moved into state to be with the person she believed she'd spend the rest of her life with. She's 21, and she found he had taken his own life, which would have been quite sudden and shocking and difficult to deal with. So my heart goes out to you, Brooke, and anyone who can relate. 13 11 14 is Lifeline. They're there for you if you have a similar experience. But how can the grief process change when you know, suicide is a factor as well?
Well, you know, there's that shock element, which is often the case for lots of, you know, losses. However, with suicide, there's also usually quite a big guilt component. Why couldn't they talk to me? Why wasn't I there? If I had only come home a little earlier. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, what could I have done differently? All sorts of questions, you know, what if questions that, you know, you can never really answer, but you can drive yourself crazy trying to. So that can slow the process of grieving, because you're also trying to process guilt and what actually happened and why it happened and, you know, the confusion around that as well.
But it's important to know that it's not your fault if that sort of thing has happened.
And absolutely.
It is never, ever your fault. It can be sometimes an unpreventable thing, but we try to prevent it as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, it's really important for people to know that if they're feeling really low, that they, you know, just talk to somebody. It doesn't have to be your partner. It could be anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. What can friends and family do in these sorts of situations to support someone going through this?
Well, one of the best things that family and friends can do, particularly in the initial period, is to provide a lot of practical support, you know, cooking, cleaning. If people have children, you know, making sure that, you know, they're maybe doing pickups and drop-offs at school or helping to make lunches, those sorts of practical things. Because when you're, you know, in that kind of initial shock and grief, it's really hard to kind of even think about what to do that day, you know, or to plan for the week. So providing that practical support. Also just being there, listening, and being aware also that sometimes the hardest time for people who have lost someone is around the 3 to 6 month period, because that's when, I suppose, the shock of a death of a loved one, you know, for everyone else kind of dissipates more quickly and they just kind of get on with their regular life. Whereas the person who was married, you know, to their partner who they lost, they still have to kind of be there in this kind of new normal life that they didn't want and they don't want, but they have to kind of work out, well, how do I rebuild my life? And sometimes in the 3 to 6 month period, you know, your friends and family are just busy with their own lives and they forget to check in, or they think that you're fine because you say you're fine. But it's really important to just be really aware that that's a really good time to be checking in quite a lot and making sure, you know, that they're still getting practical support and they still have somebody to, you know, lean on if they need it, and to, you know, just be with.
Absolutely. And when I was talking to Laura, off mic, she talked about the fact that she went overseas and went to sort of find herself and decided to take this say yes to everything sort of attitude and face some of her fears around that. How can maybe extracting yourself from your environment help with you sort of moving on, or help with the healing process?
Yeah, I think that that can be very helpful for some people to express kind of themselves in a different way, in a different environment. Sometimes it can be very isolating in some ways for everyone to know what happened to you and to kind of treat you differently. You can't even really be yourself anymore. You're kind of this person that people walk on eggshells around, or they don't know how to talk to you, or, you know, in worst case scenarios, they're not talking to you because they don't know what to say. So, and maybe one of the reasons why Laura felt like this might be a good idea, you know, go on a trip, be around people who don't know anything about me, who treat me like, you know, I'm a regular person, who likes to do regular things, and also maybe do some challenges and really, in some ways, escape the pain a little bit. And sometimes giving yourself a break from the pain can be a helpful thing to do.
Mm. And as Laura said, exactly, like, you know, even if you are home and you are around the people who love you, don't treat me with kid gloves is exactly what she said.
That's
you
right.
know, like, treat me like an adult. I'm here and I'm moving on and I'm mature and I can handle this. So
she certainly had a very mature and healthy approach for such a young person.
Absolutely. Mm. But I feel like an experience like this, you know, she talked about it herself, like really aged her in a way.
Yes, that's very true. I have a close friend who lost her partner suddenly when she was young as well. And she said, you know, that year after she lost her partner, it was like she lived 10 years because every moment was lived. It was such an intense year that it really felt like it was a decade. And it's very similar to kind of Laura's statement about feeling like she's much, much older than her years as a result of this experience.
Absolutely. It can make it quite difficult to relate. Want to get into that a bit more in a moment. It is The Hookup on Triple J. Nat Tenchic with you, and I'm joined by Dr. Lilia Nijad. She's a clinical psychologist. We're talking about the experience of being widowed under 30, how you deal with the grief, and later we'll be talking about how to date again and how to move on. Olive from Killingworth, you can relate to this conversation. Your partner is currently going through cancer as well. Can you tell us about it?
She's not currently going through breast cancer, but she just finished her treatment late 2017, mid-2017. She just finished breast cancer treatment. She had chemotherapy and radiography.
Mm-hmm. Right. And is she... And she sorry, and is she still with you?
She is still with me, thankfully, but I can definitely relate to people who have gone through the stress of losing someone who has gone through the same thing.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what it was like looking after your partner during that time.
It was a very anxious period. Going through the same, like, the situation with April was very scary. She was very scared of obviously dying. And even now, she's not ever going to be in remission, but she'll be through a period where she doesn't have cancer. But she is very anxious to ever get cancer again.
That's Absolutely. A really common thing, of course. You know, people who have experienced cancer always will worry about it recurring. How has it changed you in your relationship with her?
I don't think it's changed me. I think it's just made me more aware of the fact of, like, how cancer can affect someone.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's a very scary thing, and I don't think unless you've been through it, you'll really ever understand it.
That's right. You know, when you lose someone or when you're going through an experience like this, it's your first experience, too. You don't necessarily know what to do or how to act or how to talk about it either.
That's true.
Yeah.
Very true.
And you know, so everyone feels kind of awkward.
It's very scary.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Do you have any strategies for Lillian, for Olive, when it comes to kind of coping or supporting your partner through this kind of ordeal?
Yeah, look, it's also really important to take care of yourself and your needs. I think that sometimes when the focus is on, you know, your partner or a loved one's kind of illness, it can be really hard to focus on yourself. You almost feel like undeserving, you know, that somebody else needs you. But they're going to get the best you if you take care of yourself as well. So that's probably the most important thing.
I think definitely you need to look after yourself as well. Like, I do see a psychologist and I have talked about it with them.
However,
I think just being understanding, because you'll never be in, or if you are ever in their position, but you do need to be understanding and look at it out of a different point of view, as if you were in their position, and need to be understanding as if you were in their position. For example, sometimes April's like, it's really hard being me. Just think of it as if you're in my position, and then you have to stop and be like, okay, well, yeah, I understand as if it was in, like, you were in their position, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, that would be really hard. Where if you're into day-to-day life, you'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, like someone might not want you around, you know, like sometimes they don't want support and they just want to be left alone. And it's really easy to take that personally. So part of the learning is sometimes just to know that that's just that moment. And they definitely want you to come back and check in and support them, you know, at another time.
Of course, at the end of the day.
That's right. Sorry, continue.
And you have to be patient and understanding and be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Olive, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your story.
Of course.
We're talking about being widowed at a really young age and getting a few of your stories in too. This one here, anonymous, but says, I lost my husband at 26 to suicide with two kids aged 2 and 4. It was a long time ago and I've gone on to live a full and amazing life. I miss him and the year after was a blur. Thank you for sharing. 13, 11, 14 is Lifeline. It's a really difficult topic. So if it is bringing up anything for you, there is always someone you can talk to there. Speaking with Dr. Lillian Najjard, a clinical psychologist joining us for this topic, we're talking now about how to go and live that full and amazing life.
Mm.
Something like this happens to you when you're so young. You know, at 23, that's when Laura lost her husband.
Yes.
She has an entire life ahead of her, and she's already got this experience on her. First of all, part of the reason she got in touch with us is because lots of different people were telling her different things, and she wanted to know how to deal with everyone's suggestions and how conflicting they were. Some people saying, go out and live your life and have fun, you're young, and others saying, gee, how, you know, disrespectful to want to go out and date straight away.
That's right.
How do you deal?
Yeah. So, you know, with grief, it's very personal and everyone is entitled to their own kind of time schedule in terms of rebuilding their life and getting out there and starting, you know, new relationships. So I think she said it, you know, in her interview, you know, you really need to pay attention to yourself and what you think you need, and other people really need to listen to that rather than offering unsolicited advice, because you really can't win with advice, right? Because everyone's got a different opinion. You know, it's either too soon or it's not soon enough. And no matter what she decides to do, there are going to be people who are going to support that, and there are going to be people who are going to think, oh, no, that I wouldn't do it like that. I would do it like this. So it's really about paying attention to your own needs. And, you know, moving on doesn't necessarily mean moving on into a new relationship or going out socially. It could be moving on in lots of different ways. So what people really should be maybe asking that might be more helpful is, like, what do you want to do?
Mm.
You know, and that might not be to go out, like she said, and drink or go out and try to, you know, go on a date or something like that. It might be she wants to go travel, or she wants to take walks, you know, and go on hikes, or she wants to join a painting class, or it could be a whole range of different things. That's a really helpful question to ask someone rather than giving them advice.
Mm, absolutely. And pushing them into something new. If you are feeling like you want to look for something new, though, and you do want to start dating again and opening up your heart again, how do you go about it? It's probably quite difficult to get back into that game when these people that you're meeting don't necessarily have the same experience.
Yeah, I think that would be really daunting. I mean, for so many different reasons. because it's like, oh, do you want to take a risk again, you know, to fall in love and maybe lose that person? I mean, I'm sure that that experience can lead to anxiety for some people. And also just to have that conversation, when do you bring it up? You know, are people going to think that that's too much, or how are they going to react? I think it can be very helpful to talk to a close friend about that you're wanting to get back out there, but you're not sure how things are going to go, so that you always have somebody to talk to, just in case it doesn't go well, because you just don't know how people are going to respond. My friend who lost her partner, she went through this stage. She called it the fuck it stage.
Mm-hmm.
She just went through this very kind of, she said, like a hedonistic risk-taking stage at a period from 3 to 6 months after the death of her partner. Just, I think, as a way of kind of denying it in a way, giving herself a break from the grief. And she said that once she was dancing at a nightclub, and she just blurted out to the person she was dancing with that she had just lost her husband and she had two small children, and just watched him scuttle away slowly.
Oh my gosh.
She's like, it was the classic response.
Okay.
But you know, what's really important is to wait till you feel like comfortable talking to someone, and then just let them respond. I mean, the best response is, wow, that's, you know, that's so big, and what was that like for you? And, you know, someone who's willing to really hear and listen, and you know, if you do get involved with that person, to understand, you know, if a wave of grief comes over you, which, you know, can happen from time to time. But yeah, to feel comfortable just telling someone, taking that chance, and then just being able to cope with the response, whatever it is. And you might need some support to do that.
So you're, in your opinion, it would make more sense to disclose it as soon as possible? Is there maybe you should, when do you sort of bring it up?
Oh, well, I think it's really up to that person to assess, you know, like, I don't think first up is really most likely going to be the best time.
As, you know, as example just, has shown.
I mean, just like we don't tell everyone our most important history, you know, history right when we first meet them. We just do the small talk thing and get to know each other on a kind of a more basic level. And that's the same for everybody. So I think it's just about, you know, if you've gotten to know someone and you're really interested in getting to know them more, and then you feel comfortable and you're starting to talk about the bigger things, then it's like, well, do you want to take this chance to maybe develop a deeper, kind of closer relationship and let them in and let them know who you are? Because you have been shaped by that experience. Yeah.
It's The Hookup on Triple J. We're talking about being widowed while you're quite young. Losing a lover when you are very young, it can be a really difficult thing. And because it's so uncommon, it can be quite alienating. It's not a thing that happens that often to young people. How do you sort of deal with that sort of isolated feeling that there aren't a lot of people your age you can relate to in this respect?
Yeah, and that's really difficult. And I think, you know, at the moment, I think we're really lucky having, you know, access to lots of resources. You know, if you look online now, you can actually find, you know, a good deal of resources to help with grief in general. But I was able to find an excellent resource for people who have been widowed as a young person. And it's firstlight.org.au. So they are a national organization and maybe even international. And they do all sorts of, they offer support, online forums, catch-ups, resources. There's even like a retreat if you wanted to go and kind of be with lots of people who've been through your experience. And they also, you know, have a list of resources, you know, in the community. Like Griefline is on, you know, on their kind of list of support networks and things like that too. So it's a great resource for people who are in Laura's position.
Firstlight.org.au. Excellent. Dr. Lillian, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If there's something you want covered on the show, send it in via thehookup@abc.net.au or via Facebook. Just search for The Hookup on Triple J. Plus, if you're loving what you're hearing, give us a rating wherever you find your favourite podcasts. It'll help other people find the show.